Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to a truly special Empire Podcast interview special. I still recall distinctly the first time I was introduced to the work of John Woo. I was in the kitchen at my friend Ross's house in Banbridge, County Down, Northern Ireland, where a couple of us had gathered to watch a film called Hard Boiled, based on a recommendation in, of all places, Empire magazine. I can't remember if it was the review by Mark Salisbury that called it more exciting than a dozen diehards, and also had a cracking line that said that Woo directed as if he'd been born with a camera in one hand and a rocket launcher in the other. But either way, it was a glowing recommendation that we took. And we, as nascent action junkies, got the VHS. Yes, folks, VHS. That's how fucking old I am. And put it on a crappy little portable TV in Ross's kitchen. And life was never the same again. As we watched Chow Yun-Fat and Tony Leung blow away bad guys galore, John Woo blew my mind. A couple of years later, I was studying film at university and wrote my dissertation on John Woo and the Hong Kong action cinema. Never mind what mark I got. That's none of your beeswax. But it shows the impact Woo's work had had on me as I voraciously hunted down his movies and then moved on to his contemporaries, the likes of Ringo Lam and Choi Hawk. A couple of years after that, I was being interviewed for a junior writer position at Empire and was asked what upcoming movie I would put on the cover. I replied without hesitation, John Woo's Wind Talkers, which really wasn't the kind of movie that would wind up on the cover of Empire, but they gave me the job. Anyway, those fools, they've had years to regret it. And then, just the other day, a number of years after that job interview, a number of years after Ross's Kitchen, I won't say exactly how long, but you can work it out, I found myself in an LA office suite surrounded by posters of John Woo's movies, Hard Boiled, The Killer, A Better Tomorrow, Bullet in the Head, and, interestingly, a massive poster for Jean-Pierre Melville's The Cercle Rouge, and, more pertinently, sitting on a sofa 3 feet away from me was John Woo, the father of the modern-day action movie whose work in Hong Kong defined the heroic bloodshed genre, turned Chow Yun-Fat into the coolest leading man on the planet, and then caught the eye of Hollywood, where he went on to make films like Hard Target, Broken Arrow, Face Off, Mission Impossible 2, and, yes, Wind Talkers. Since then, Woo has returned to China to make more movies, movies like his period epic Red Cliff, and come back to Hollywood to direct the likes of Silent Night and a remake of his own classic, The Killer. And now, he and his movies, principally the Hong Kong action movies he made before the move to the States in the early 90s, but also with a couple of those Hollywood efforts and both parts of Red Cliff thrown into the mix for good measure, are the subject of a brand new season currently running at the BFI South Bank in London entitled Bullets and Brotherhood, the films of John Woo. And so, when I found myself in Los Angeles last week, I was delighted when Mr. Woo agreed to sit down with me for a good old chunk of time to talk about his movies and his approach to movie making. We don't really talk much about the Hollywood era, if at all, in this conversation. Instead, we very much focused on his Hong Kong era and the action movies he made over there. And I hope that you will enjoy it. Woo is now nearly 80 years old, but he can still talk with the best of them. He's still hoping to make a movie with Nicolas Cage very, very soon. I will say in this interview, sometimes he would become so animated that he would hold a mic away from his face. So now and again, he may become like quite faint and distant, but hopefully those bits will still be audible. This was a joy, a dream come true to talk to the man who, in my opinion, is the greatest action director of all time about some of the greatest action movies of all time. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by a legendary director who is currently enjoying a BFI season dedicated to him and his movies, the great John Woo. How are you, sir?
I'm so grateful, and I'm really excited about it. And then I was so amazed. It's after 30 something years, and the movie we released again. But still, got so much great support from everywhere. You know, yeah. So I totally. Shock, because you know that I'm so amazing about the people that they still remember the film and love the film, And I still got so much enthusiasm about the Hong Kong film.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, and about me, you know. So I feel I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have a chance to make the movie, and then to get the worldwide release, and also had made so many people happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I just, you know, grateful. I'm grateful.
But we should say, first of all, we're not in London right now, you and I. We're in your incredible office in Los Angeles, which is surrounded with posters from your movies, many of which are playing in London at the BFI. Did you try to get over to London? But I imagine you're a very busy man, so...
I tried to, but unfortunately, I got so much work to do in here. And because I really love, you know, my biggest wish is to make a movie in England.
Really?
I really love England. And I especially love to work with the English actor, mm-hmm. and the writer, you know. And I always have greatly admired the English actor. They have very well educated about film, about, you know, everything, you know. And then and I like the way they speaking a line, you know. This almost no matter what kind of movie I watch, you know, when I'm listening what they're saying, I just feel like I'm listening a poem. You know, their words are so crystal clear, and a lot of emotion, you know.
Yeah.
So and also make you feel, you know, they are very clever, you know. You know, usually I like the quiet movie, you know.
Yeah.
But for English movie, I like then to have a lot of dialogue, because I like to listening what they're saying. So it made me feel the movie is really about a culture.
Yes.
About a culture and the real human nature.
Yes.
So you only could find from the English movie.
So you couldn't make Silent Night with an English actor, because you'd have him talking all the time.
Well, we have a problem with casting for the film. We did try to work it out with the English actor, but you know, unfortunately, there are not much actor will like the idea, you know.
Because, oh, really?
Because there are no dialogue, you know. And that's, you know, especially in Hollywood, you know, the actors need a lot of dialogue.
But Buster Keaton had no dialogue. You know, it's a great challenge for an actor. But yeah you're right, because a lot of your movies are so balletic, and they're so operatic. And yeah, of course, there's dialogue in things like The Killer and Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
But it's also about movement and body language, and saying a lot without saying anything. So is that something that you were always drawn to as a director, even back when you first started out, really, with action movies?
Yeah, that's, you know, my style, you know. And maybe when I was a child, I got I have a great difficulty for speaking. Yeah, hard to pronounce any word, or try to speak out a good sentence to make the people understand, to make the people understand what I'm saying.
Oh, really?
What I'm thinking. So that's why I have been trained to, not seeing anything and using the eyes to look, to observe, to look at the people, look at what happened, what happened, around me, and then I like to look at the beautiful landscape or the movie, that's why it had drawing me into especially like everything about visual.
Yeah.
I got so many thing, always keep in my mind. So that's why I always like a quiet movie. It allowed me to think and allow me to see, what is a good thing in the whole frame, so when I walk down the street, when I look at the window, they always look like a painting to me.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's how I when I grew up a little bigger, then I joined the stage player,
yeah.
And then because I try to train myself, speak much better. So I started as an actor on the stage when I was in high school. So it's part of a training. And then I don't speak much, but whatever I wanted to speak, it could be it's necessary.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that's why when I'm watching a movie, I like more visual and less dialogue.
I love that you say you love quiet movies.
Yeah.
Because your movies are sometimes the opposite of quiet. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on. but in a way, you were almost not an accidental action filmmaker, but that's not how you started off. You didn't start off as an action director. That was something that happened later on.
Well, actually, when I was a kid, I wanted to be, my first wish was I wanted to be a minister.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to be a priest, because I'm a Christian, I really, like the minister in the church, but somehow after I got involved with the arts, then I changed my mind, I think art is so fascinating, fulfilled my spirit and also give my so much pressure about looking at art, all kind of the painting and great performance or great movies, that make me change my mind.
Is that one of the reasons why the end of The Killer takes place in a church? Is that?
Yeah, because the church to me was it's a really holy place to me. This is like heaven, And then when I was a kid, I usually beat up by the gang. Yeah, beat up by the gang. I got fighting with the gang every day. When I was that little.
Wow.
Because they all wanted me to join them. Mm-hmm. So and every morning when I got up, I got to grab something like a weapon. I had to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew when I went out to the alley, I would get ambushed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and then I got to fight back very hard. I usually got beating in my head. So, and then when I came home, I was got a bloody face. With a bloody face. So, and then whenever I got beat up, I used to run into the church nearby.
Uh-huh.
And then the church... Yeah, make me feel safe.
Gives you solace.
Yeah. And then I can stay there, do something, or sometimes do something, or sometimes doing nothing, and just sit there looking at the cross, the Holy Cross, and make me feel peace and feel safe. So I left the church, you know, and then when I was in high school, I even helping the church to draw the poster, you know, for every Sunday's topic, you know.
Yes.
So and then I love the church. I think it's just like heaven. It's a wonderful place. So, but sometimes it got ruined by the evil, you know, and then when the church being attacked, it kind of a symbolic, it's a those evil thing or evil people, you know, they damage the holy place.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was to make our hero to fight with them.
Yes.
So there's a it got some meaning there, you know, because I think we really need to well protect the church. So when I was a kid, you know, the church and the theater,
mm-hmm.
the two things I really love, you know. So whenever I get caught in trouble, I either went into the church or the theater.
Wow, both made you feel safe.
Yeah. Feel safe, and feel very happy, you know, and I feel very happy, you know. When I was, even though we were very poor, but in the old time, you know, the adult can bring in the little kid into the theater, no need the ticket, you know. It's for free.
Nice.
Yeah, so every day we have a bunch of poor kids, you know, it's outside of the theater, they're begging some adult people, please, just say that I'm your son, and then you bring me into the theater, and then I will find a way to watch a movie, you know. So usually the good-hearted people will like to, you know, bring me in or some of the kids, you know, take it into the theater and to watch movie. And then we're sneaking underneath the chair, because the conductor, you know, the person who was checking the ticket, I don't know how to call it. And then they find out there's arts, or they kind of,
will kick you out.
Girl, and kick you out or beating up you or something.
Oh my God, okay.
You know, once in a while I got beat up, whatever, I walk up to the stair, you know, and then... got to find out, you know, that I wasn't look like the man's son, you know. So he gave me a punch on the face, and then that cost me, falling off of the stair. It was there and into the ground. I got bleeding on my mouth, you know, and then But I still, you know, going outside to the side door, you know, they continue to watching the movie from the little crack, you know.
What movie was it? Do you remember?
Kind of like a Western, you know.
Okay.
You know, old time, you know, every in the morning and nighttime, they were showing the Chinese language, Cantonese film. Mm-hmm. And then every day, you know, 5:30 is have a special screening for the foreign film. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the old musical or gangster film or Western, mainly Western and cartoon.
And these all had an impact on you. They all were in your brain and knocking around.
Yeah, I am so amazing. I love the Western, and I especially love the musical.
Yes,
the musical. My first musical watch was Visual of Oz.
Yes.
With Judy Garland, you know.
Yes.
So I was so amazing about the musical. It just looked so beautiful. When I'm watching those movies, to let me to forget what I had been through in real life, you know. I forgot all the beating. Mm. I forgot all the bleeding as well. You know, so I make me feel, you know, they always make me feel, you know, they are always a good people, some good people in the world. The world is not that bad.
Yeah.
You know, when I raised in the slums, it really dark and dirty in a place, you know. Yeah, you could hardly to see any good sunlight, and even there were no trees around.
Wow.
So it's only you know, people, you know, like all the poor people, you know, poor family, and they stick together. And
yes.
Anyway, so. That after I found a movie, you know, I really got a lot of joy by watching movies.
And now, over the years, you will have brought that same joy to people watching your movies. I remember how I felt watching Hard Boiled for the first time, and how I'd never seen anything like it. You know, it absolutely accelerated me. And then I went back and I watched your other movies. I watched things like The Killer and A Better Tomorrow 1 and 2 and Bullet in the Head. And, you know, and I was just so blown away by what you were doing. When did you become aware that you were having the same effect on people, but obviously with these action movies as filmmakers you grew up with, you grew up watching, had the same effect on you?
Well, I was making my movie, like A Better Tomorrow, The Killer, you know, I've never know how the audience going to react to it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I just make my film, you know, and then the only thing is that I think I'm living with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with the audience. If there's something I like, and then if there's something I feel good, you know, I think that the audience will feel the same way.
Yeah.
So by the other hand, I'm a very romantic guy. You know, I love all kind of beauty.
Yeah.
I always wanted to to make some beautiful people or beautiful moment, a beautiful emotion, beautiful meaning of life, you know, and then put it into the film. I think there's a beautiful me, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it's to make a beautiful movie, you know, I mean. So, and by the meantime, I must say, I greatly got a big influence from the West, Western movie, the movie from the West.
Yes.
You know, like the French New Wave.
Yep.
My great great idol David Lean, you know,
yes.
and a bunch of English director, and old time Hollywood movies and North European film, you know, like Ingmar Bergman, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up with that, you know, and then I think if I can make a movie as beautiful as they are, you know, that will be fantastic, you know. But it was only a dream, you know. And then, of course, you know, and then later, I found that since I love dancing so much.
Yeah.
I love dancing so much. So I think, an action movie also can make it look beautiful.
Yeah.
So since I got so much good influence from my old master Chung Chit in Shaw Brothers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he had made me learn a lot about the action, the kung fu, yes. you know, the martial art, you know, and then the other thing was something I learned about, you know, from Chung Chit is that he really loved his actress.
Mm.
And he knew and how to find a way to make them look great and make them, you know, look more like a hero, you know.
Mm.
So he would decide everything just for the actor. So that's what I learned from him. So when I'm directing my own movie, I just, you know, do what he did before. I love my director. I give him a lot of great respect.
Mm.
And I find my duty is I got to try many ways to make my actor look great.
You succeeded.
Yeah.
He's extraordinarily cool, is Chow Yun-Fat. When did you first meet him, and when did you know that he would be your leading man?
Well, you know, it was a long story. In 1985, when I've got a supporter from Choi Hawk, my very good friend, he supports me to make A Better Tomorrow. And then there was my first gangster movie, you know. And then, we had the same thing, and we wanted to make this gangster movie for the family, not for the action audience.
Yes. Okay.
So it means that we want to make it a very high class, you know, with a true spirit, a very spiritual, you know, gangster movie. So this is why I was suggesting to use the real actor.
Okay.
The real actor to do the action film.
Yeah.
Like Chow Yun-Fat, and then I found Chow Yun-Fat, he was pretty popular on TV, you know,
yeah.
but not on a TV series, but not in a movie. Even though he had, worked on some movie, but it all flopped, you know, and he had got a nickname called a box office poison. but in my mind, you know, he's a great actor, you know. I think I just like Alain Delon,
yes.
and Ken Takacola,
yes.
you know,
they
look so much elegant, so charming, and so beautiful, you know, so handsome. But they can, so when they did some action, you know, and he looked so classy, you know. So I think of what I see when I saw Zhou Yun-fat, and he also have a similar quality.
Yeah.
And he's a great actor, and he's not a fighter.
Yeah.
He had never learned any kung fu. He had never learned. And he said to me he even had never punched a guy.
Mm.
So he's a gentleman.
Yeah.
So I think that's great, you know, because I always want my hero is a more look like he had a style, the style pretty much like Gary Grant.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So that's why I use him for April Tomorrow as one of the main character, you know, as a killer.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, and also make him, you know, dress nice, you mm-hmm. know, more pretty much like Alan DeLong. That might be very interesting, using a real actor yeah. to do the action scene, you know, we'll make the action sequence look more like a classy,
yeah.
you know. So, more of a upper level, you know. So, yeah. He did very good, and then as I know, when we worked together, I saw him how to hold a gun, you know. I said, you just watch Clint Eastwood's movie, you know. He's holding a gun in Dirty Harry. He's holding a gun like this. Yeah. And then, hold a gun of fire, you know. Sometimes it'll look like, Clint Eastwood sometimes look like a Mel Gibson, you know. but the good thing about using Zhou Yun-fat, he got the both a great quality of acting and action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you taught him how to use to hold a gun.
Yeah.
In both hands as well, because that's a trademark. That's a John Woo, Zhou Yun-fat
yeah,
trademark.
But the first beginning was using one gun. Because when I talked to the props guy, you know, in my movie, a real hero never used a machine gun.
Yeah.
Because the machine gun is so easy. Even though there are over 10 people, you know, 10 enemy, you know.
Yes.
In a room, you know, you just, you know, press a trigger, you know, da, 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 and to them all. I think there's no hero.
Yeah.
I was suggesting our hero only using one handgun, just like an ancient knight using a sword.
Yes.
And then using his brain. When he do the action, you know, he knew how to do it, and when he saw the guy so precisely. But it's not using one gun to handle 14 guys in a room. I think it's hard to believe. It's hard to make the audience believe it. He could do it with one gun. And by the meantime, I'm so care about the rhythm.
Yeah.
Especially the music rhythm. So
yeah.
when I'm thinking or designing an action sequence, I will listen. I like to listen in some kind of music.
Okay.
In my mind, you know. So I said, is there any gun can fire non-stop, continuing firing, you know? And then they showed me the gun of Bertha, you know, it's from Switzerland. Those guys had ran all the props gun from England.
Okay.
And we were the first time.
Right.
To, So they show me a different kind of gun, and then when they show me the breather can load either 9 bullet or 14 bullet, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can fire, continuing fire, bum, 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 like that. But I said, even though I don't want him to use a machine gun, but I want him to fire to cut the rhythm like a drum beat. I get, yeah, it's nonstop. I said, one gun is not enough. How about try two? And then the guy showed me, oh, that's interesting. And then they showed me the fire two gun, but you got to, shoot one by one. You cannot fire at the same time because the frame is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
It will hurt a finger.
Yes.
So, and then they fire to me. And then when they fire, I say, go faster, faster. And then I take my, lap. when they fire so high, I say, okay, that's it. That's a good rhythm, you know. And they're very smart. So I let the children father using two guns.
Wow.
Using two guns, and then by the meantime, since he's a clever man, he is clever enough to using four guns here, you know, to set the two guns outside of the door in case he needed it.
Yes.
And then he used the first two gun first, and then after. Red level bullet, and then he step out, he can grab another gun. So that was the idea. I've been working, thinking of the scene to design the scene for a few weeks.
Wow.
I was so glad, you know, in it worked out very well, you know, when the audience first time seen it, they were shocked. Oh.
You got on so well with Chow Yun-Fat. You guys worked together a lot of times, of course. You killed him off a whole bunch, John. I mean, you killed him in a lot of movies as well. Why was that part of the heroic bloodshed tradition that the hero had to die? In a lot of your movies, not all of them, obviously, but in a lot.
Well, there are two things. One's from the Chinese philosophy, you know, and as a man got a spirit of chivalry, he can be willing to die for a friend or for a country or for the one he loved, for the justice, you know, whatever, you know. So that is qualified, you know. And he feel, you know, that's the, you know, the real knight, whoever got the true spirit should do it. And but in the meantime, I also have great influence from Alain Delon's movie.
Yes.
Yeah, almost in every other movie, he died at the
end. He died too. Yeah.
That's why.
Yes.
Because why was working with Chow Yun-Fat, shooting with Chow Yun-Fat.
Yeah.
I didn't see Chow Yun-Fat on the set. I saw Alain Delon.
Oh, of course.
In front of me.
Yes.
Actually, he's Chow Yun-Fat. but I saw him as Alain Delon and Ken Takakura, you know, the Japanese actor. Yes. You know, I really also have greatly admired him. You know, so. That's how I work. That's how I got the influence from, you know. So when I try to explain about the true spirit of chivalry in America, it's hard to. I had a hard time to explain to them. You know, that kind of spirit I really like. Mm. And that kind of movie I really like to make, you know. Mm. So that's why I couldn't get any the same kind of a script, you know, from in here.
When you started off making action movies, Joy Hawk was a big mentor for you at the time. You came up around the same time as directors like Ringo Lam as well. The heroic bloodshed genre was huge at the time. How aware were you of it? Did you discuss it with other directors? That was the tradition in Hong Kong action cinema at the time, as well as obviously the philosophy you were talking about.
No, they were not, because they were non-visited people later talk to me.
Okay.
Because, you know, they, at that time, the Hong Kong movie was, the comedy was so popular, you know.
Yeah.
And then I always said to them, you know, that this kind of movie, it doesn't work to make it, you know. I mean, they kind of crazy and accessory, you know, an overact, you know, of a drama, you know. I think this kind of movie is not for long, you know. And then people just, even though you will make a lot of money, but you know, another year, the audience were totally forgot the movie. So why we make it? So, but the people didn't like to listen to me. You know, I said, a movie should be like, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, or, you know, yeah, the, or, you know, the Third Man, you know, and the 400 Bro, you know, or 8.5, you know. So, and they thought I was a pusher, you know. So they didn't listen to me. So I didn't have a chance to really talk to them. But in the meantime, I think differently from the others.
Yes.
So I hardly got a friend. My only friend is Choi Hawk.
Oh, really?
Okay. Choi Hawk. You know, with Choi Hawk, we can talk a lot of things. He also had given me a lot of help to solve any problem. And actually, he also very good at dialogue as well.
Oh, good.
We both like a human story, but we also like to make a movie the bigger audience. You know, we're happy to accept it and feel it, you know.
Mm.
So but in the meantime, we like to use art form to make an action movie, you know.
Yeah. I think some people might be surprised to learn that you essentially improvised a lot of your action sequences. So you would wait to get on set, and then you would design the action sequence
based
on the set that you had or based on the location you had.
Yeah.
Which, given how intricate a lot of your action sequences are, is mind-blowing. So how did you do that? How did you...
I don't know. I mean, maybe I trust my instinct.
Yeah.
You know, I said the first thing, first of all, I was pretty involved in a movie, you know, and then especially for the main character. When I'm working with, shooting a Zhou Yun-fat, you know, mm-hmm. as a killer, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I feel myself as a killer. And I work like a killer, mm-hmm. and I live like a killer.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went home, you know, and my wife and my kid didn't know how to handle me, and didn't know how to talk to me.
You were a method director.
Yeah, you can say that. And then, so when I come into the set, you know, and when usually in a script, there's a two or three movie, you know, I even shot without a script because of the whole movie all in my head, you know.
Yeah.
And then we only got a simple outline, you know, so for the crew, you know, and then financer, of course, you know. Then I usually think very fast and make a decision very fast. You know, I know there's something in my mind, there's some kind of action in my mind. So when I got in on a location, if I see a long table, and I know how to use the table, okay, maybe our hero live up from the other end, you know, live up in the air and shooting two guys, you know, over there, mm-hmm. and then he land on the table and flip, you know, to the other side, and then continue shooting another guy, you know.
Yeah.
Then I would do it from by myself. I did it by myself first, you know. I using a small chair, I step on it and leave it, holding to dummy guns, you know, and rolling on the ground, and then ask the stunt coordinator, okay, put the three guy there, and put another two guy behind me. After I shoot the two guy in front of me, and then I turn, you know, to kill another guy.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel good, it was thank you. They all feel good. And I think our actor will feel good.
Wow.
That's how I work. And by the meantime, I love dancing.
Yes.
I was a pretty good dancer.
Twinkle,
you know,
toes.
And especially cha-cha. You know, I love cha-cha. You know? I love cha-cha, you know. So, I know, you know, so that's why I shoot the action sequence more like a dance.
Yes.
So
yes.
When I'm on a set, you know, I just feel like I'm making a dancing sequence instead of a fighting scene. So anyway, and by the meantime, I'm a good editor.
Yes.
So I edit and shooting at the same time. So, and every action piece and the camera speed, you know, on which camera use a normal speed or 50 frame or 100 or 96 frame, you know, the different angle, and all the camera angle were connected, not just suited for a reference or for something like that.
Mm.
You know, it's suited for real. When he jump over this camera and the other camera can capture his close-up and then bring him into shooting the gun and then land on the ground, and then we got another camera on the ground. So that's how I work. And by the meantime, since I like a European film so much, you know, so when I remember when I'm shooting the killer, in the beginning, we got no script, no story. I just want to make a movie, a homage to Jean-Pierre Melville's The Last Samurai. So, and then all of a sudden, I got the idea. If the cop, you know, also become the killer, you know, so I think in order the cop, you know, wanted to catch the killer, you know, and he had to become him, you know, and he had to understand him. So, and then all of a sudden, I got one shot in my mind. One shot in my mind is the camera outside of the window, and the window with a lot of tall glass with so many frame, you know.
Mm.
And then the camera put outside, and then story from left to right,
mm-hmm.
and then each frame got the first frame We saw the killer sitting there,
yes,
and smoking,
yes,
and thinking. And then when the camera crossing to the second frame, and then we changed the cop sitting in the same position and doing the same thing and smoking and thinking.
Yeah.
Like they're thinking each other.
Yes.
And then to the third frame, we come back to the killer again.
Yes.
And then the cop. So just this one idea, this one shot, we start with kind of one shot.
Yeah.
And nobody know what's going on and why am I going to shoot it. I just asked the producer, okay, find me the French house in Hong Kong. Find me a French house with a tall window.
Yes.
And then there was a lot of, frame, And then so they fired it for months, and they couldn't find one. So I said, because I got a one shot, this is the only shot for the whole movie. It's a key shot for the movie. So, and then I started writing the story. Start from this shot.
From that one shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from the one shot. And then after a month, the producer came up to me and said, John, we couldn't find a house. this is Hong Kong, not French. Not French. So disappointed. It's an English colony. The English house look pretty much like a French house. Anyway, at last we find an old, very old building,
yeah,
to get the kind of shot. So we got the shot. So that's how I work. Sometimes, I shot what I feel, I shot what I, all of a sudden, there's something come up in my mind that I never shot it, I really miss while we were working in Hong Kong, we really got so much creative freedom.
Yes.
And no one will come up to you and send you any notes to give you any advice even though the financier never got a chance to come to the set.
Okay.
For the financial Golden Princess, they got so much money, and they own the column bus,
Okay. Yes.
And then for the film business, they also they have so much confidence on us.
Yeah.
So. Each time when we are trying to start a movie, to shoot a movie, we just give him, sometimes give him a script, but sometimes it's just a very simple outline. And then they usually add, how much? I said, okay, about $20 million. Oh, okay. What kind of star? Joe and Fat, and he said, oh, okay, yeah, that's great. And then, when are you going to shoot it? Maybe in a couple of months. Okay, go ahead, do it.
Wow.
Give her the money. So they're very simple, it's so simple. And then because we trust each other, they know how we work, and I know how to make a movie and get the money back.
Yes, yes.
Because since our market is so small, we only got Hong Kong, Taiwan, or Singapore, or some Chinatown in a foreign country.
Yeah.
And then there was, so... we could easily make the money back. So we have we got used to designing some action sequence, audience love, you know, and then anyway, that's how we make the movie. And then we are really like a tour.
Yes.
On the set.
Yes.
We just shot with the feeling.
Wow.
So that's the good thing about Hong Kong. And by the meantime, in the 1980, the Hong Kong movie had a big change. They were changing, you know, like a revolution. So there are a lot of great filmmakers, they have been called the Hong Kong New Wave.
Yeah.
Most of them have been studying from England or America or, you know, Australia. And anyway, so they are very knowledgeable filmmaker. So everyone will bring out some, you know, great new film, you know.
Yes.
So that's why I was lucky that it's a chance to, you know, work with Choi Hawk, and then one of them, you know.
Yeah.
So that's we were in lucky timing.
But you said that you used to say to the producers, you know, I'd like to do this, and they would go, how much? 30 million. And then when will it shoot? Next year, maybe. With Hard Boiled was a big step up. Was it harder to raise the money for Hard Boiled? I mean, it was such a bigger movie than anything you'd done before.
No, it wasn't hard to do that, you know. And but the best thing was that, you know, when I shot the film, I nearly got crazy. Nerve breakdown, you know, because I was, like you said, you know, I'm kind of like the method director, yeah, you know. Yeah. So, like, when I'm, I watch the news every day, you know, and then the reason I saw that film, because at that time, the Hong Kong gang almost out of control.
Yes.
They got the firepower much bigger than the police force.
Yes.
You know, so I feel, and then shooting people on the street, you know, and it was so crazy, you know, I got so mad. Every day whenever I watch a film and some good people being beat up by the gang or shot by the gang, you know, I got so much, I got fury.
Yeah.
I put the anger into the film.
Yeah.
I just keep shooting. When I'm sitting on the set, the same guy playing the big guy, and I saw him, he's just is the guy who did that bad thing to the innocent people.
Yeah.
And then I will ask the specific guy, give him much bigger powder, much bigger blood, you know, and blow him up, you know. And then our hero, you give him more bullet and shit, you know. So, because I was drawing in the news, the news, you know, what had happening in the real world, and I bring it into the set.
Yes.
You know, so we have to, you know, just like to give them a listen and also give them heart.
Yes.
So, when I'm shooting this and that, in a scene, you know, killing a couple of guys, that's enough, you know, we have to move on and do something. But when I'm shooting, no one could stop me. I keep thinking, you know, beside the criminal, and then also there are some other country, like a small country, attacked by the other, you know, much stronger country, you know. Mm. So the war is going on. So I also make me mad, you know. So I also made the scene, the action sequence, like in the hospital.
Yes.
Actually, it was a symbolic of a small country when they are being attacked. You know, everyone have been hiding into the war zone, you know.
Yes.
So, and then they have to fight back, and they need a hero, you know, to save them, something like that. So that's why I saw the script. They're not in the script. Every scene is all depends on my mood and my thinking, you know, and then what I have emotionally infected by something bad happened, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I don't say why we keep. Just shooting, and then she said there's no script and nobody know when the movie, when the story going to be end, you know. So that's why we are way over budget. we have the double and triple of that, shooting schedule are getting extended longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
We got to deliver the prints before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the buyer from Korea, from other country, you know, they already pay the money and they already set up the releasing day in their own country.
Mm.
They were supposed to if I deliver before the Christmas,
yeah,
and they will release the in the Christmas day, so they booked the theater everywhere. But when I shoot the Christmas, the movie still have 1/3 need to finish. So, and then they all came over and fly over and three, and then they begging me, John, you got to finish the movie. I said, yeah, I'll try to do it quick, you know. That's how it, yeah, so that's how it worked.
Oh my God. Which is amazing, because that the hospital sequence is just extraordinary. The corridor shootout, the famous single shot take where you had to change the set whilst Tony and Chow Yun-fat were in the elevator. I love that. But just finally, just going back to what you were saying earlier on about, you know, figuring out the action sequences, putting yourself in the hero's shoes, seeing how it would look, seeing how it would feel. Did you do that in the hospital sequence? Did you show Chow Yun-fat and Tony Leung what to do? How, you know, that shootout sequence? Were you doing that for them?
Every scene.
Every single scene. No wonder you were exhausted.
Yeah. Because, you know, I love to do that. I love to, you know, and holding the gun, you know, and running with the actors. You do that. And the cameraman, you know, okay, you... The camera follow from here, and then after I fire, and then you turn to our close up, and then we keep leading us running, and then all of a sudden we change the direction, and then you change to come to, you know, over my shoulder, and then shooting the scene. So that's how I work with the actor, you know, and by the meantime. Our actor is very brave. The reason we like to make a long shot, because since because we all have been stuck at a location for over a month. You know, since it was a night scene and we got to shoot at the daytime, so we had to darken all the windows. So we got to shoot 24 hours a day. And no one can leave the room. Mm. And we only got a simple bed for the actor to get some rest, you know. Somebody get tired and go get some rest. And then after we are all ready, and then we continue the shooting. And by the meantime, you know, we have exchanged the crew every 9 hours. So,
wow.
And then we never know if it's a daytime or nighttime because the windows are all dark. And then while we were working, all of a sudden, the maid came in. He said, Mr. Wu, the breakfast is ready. Oh, and then we know, it's the morning. then we ate and sure, you know. So the whole thing was when we shoot a good guy firing and a dead guy got shot, every day doing the same thing, feel so boring. And by the meantime, we all stuck in hell.
Yes.
And nobody know when we'll came out from hell, you know, when I get through. So all of a sudden, I got the idea. I said, how about this? You know, I like to do a 4 or 5 minute long shot. And then Joe and Fire and Tony Leung and they were running. Start shooting and from one corridor, and then they are from first floor, going to the second floor, and do it all in one shot. And it had never happened, you know, it had never seen in any of Hong Kong film before, even the Western film, you know. So everybody's so excited about it. And then especially if they got so excited about it. But the thing was, we only got one floor. And then I said, okay, I came up with the idea. How about after the shooting in the first floor, we build a elevator.
Yes.
And the two heroes get into the elevator. When the door closed, we made up 20 seconds dialogue. No. So, and let us say anything, you know. And then in 20 seconds, the whole crew got to change the set from outside the elevator. They wipe out they have to wipe out the blood and pull out a dead body and replace the table and the window.
Yeah.
And then make the to build the second floor set in 20 seconds.
Wow.
So after 20 seconds, when the town is finished, the door open is on they come to the second floor and continue shooting, and the camera follow. So the first day we fail, and then we have no monitor, but at that time, we have used about 9 cameras from different angles.
Mm.
So the special effect guy can hiding in one room, can see the actor, where they go, when do they fire, so they can press a button, you know. Oh, it was very tough. The first day was fail.
Yeah.
But we already ran out of money.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I got to change the idea. But the whole crew, even the actor, said, no. John, and especially the stunt guy, John, this is your Your idea is a great idea. You're going to make the Hong Kong film history.
Mm.
Let's do it again. But they won't give us more money. Money is nothing. Let's do it again. So the whole court, they will request to do one more time. The second day, fail. Because the elevator will be built or it got stuck. Couldn't open.
Oh my God.
So, and then the third day, fail. I say, all right, that's it. We have no more time. And then I got so much pressure from the producer, you know, and then, okay, let's try the last one. One more time. So, and then we do it again in the 4 days.
Mm.
So we did, and then we did it. Even though there was some little problem there, but still okay. So at least we got through, we got a whole song. Oh, and then everybody so relaxed and cheered, you know. So I'm so glad to make this song happen.
Yeah.
So I must say, besides, we have a good actor, I also have a good team, very good team, especially the camera crew and the stunt people. When the camera crew, when I, for the last scene, when I you know, blow up the whole building, yeah, so we have set 50 bombs, you know, in every three-story, it was a three-story abandoned Coca-Cola factory.
Yes.
So,
yes.
We have set, you know, 50 bombs, you know, by the window. So, and a lot of people running out and they blow up. When the camera follow our hero, Dory, tracking, here holding the baby, dummy baby, running in the middle of an explosion.
Yeah.
And then, but I saw the, off the camera, the explosion is still continuing.
Oh my God.
And there's so much good fire.
Yeah.
And then I kicked the camera operator. I said, grab the camera to get into the fire, give me a shot. So the camera assistant got to unscrew the camera from the tripod. In through the 3 seconds, and then I grab the camera, put on the shoulder, and grab a wet towel, you know, or put on the hand, and then he ran into the fire and continued to shoot the explosion and fire.
Oh my God!
That's how we work.
Oh my God!
That's how we work. And then for this thing guy, okay, they were two story. Okay, you go up to the first floor and you got shot. Yeah, and you fall face down, fall on the ground with no cushion, with no protection. I said, okay, we will do it. And then he got shot, fall on the ground. That's how we, so they're so brave and so cooperative and the high spirit, you know. So I love my stunt guy. So that's why, one of the bigger reasons, I like to continue making an action movie.
Yes.
Because I have highly respect the stunt people from all over the world. You know, in Hong Kong and America and England, or, you know, France, you know, wherever I work, you know, I just want to keep the stunt people alive.
Yes, absolutely.
Keep
working as well, yeah.
Keep working and keep trying something new. And they love challenges.
Good.
They love challenges. So I feel like, I'm working with a friend, honestly. Yeah.
On that note, John Woo, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. But now I have to go to the airport. I have to fly home. But
thank you so
wonderful.
Much. Thank you for your great support. And I hope England, I mean the British soccer team will win.
We shall see. We shall see. John Woo, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that was John Woo, folks. And while his World Cup prediction skills may not be on point, this is obviously coming out the morning after England lost to Argentina in the World Cup semi-finals. That interview very much was on point. What a pleasure it was to talk to the great John Woo. And Bullets and Brotherhood, the BFI season dedicated to John Woo, is still running at the BFI South Bank in London until the end of July. So you'll be able to see both parts of A Better Tomorrow. You'll be able to see The Killer, Bullet in the Head, Once a Thief, which is a film that is often overlooked in his canon. You'll be able to see Hard Target, which is a film in which Jean-Claude Van Damme bites the rattle off a rattlesnake. You'll be able to see Face Off, both parts of Red Cliff, and of course, Hard Boiled, which looks way better on the big screen at the BFI than it did on my mate Ross's portable TV. But you're going to enjoy it every bit as much as I did. And hey, maybe even a little more. And I hope you enjoyed that interview. I know we didn't cover everything in Woo's career, but I did genuinely have to run to the airport. But it was an absolute pleasure talking to John Woo. I know I say that at the end of every interview. This has been a pleasure. What an absolute pleasure this has been. Sometimes, spoiler alert, I don't always mean it. But on this occasion, I very much did. John Woo, dream come true. And on that note, that is it for this John Woo interview special. There will be more interview specials coming your way very, very soon, including Matt Damon, Tom Holland, John Leguizamo, and Himesh Patel on The Odyssey, and Scott Aukerman, host of my favourite podcast in the entire universe, Comedy Bang Bang, talking ahead of his forthcoming UK and Ireland tour. That's going to be up there as well. And other stuff. Other stuff's coming your way very, very soon. So keep your eyes peeled, and thank you as ever for listening and supporting the podcast. It means a great deal. All right, that's enough for me. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.